You've asked for it. Here it is, episode 3 of White Line Fever with Rugby League's answer to Glenn A. Baker, Steve Mascord. Hi, I'm Mark Braybrook from Fox Sports. And whether it be Brookvale Oval or the Antler at Narrabeen or the SCG or Salinas, Steve has it covered. We'll talk to rugby league players who are music tragics and musicians who love their rugby league. Here's Steve.
Third episode of White Line Fever, and thank you for that flattering introduction from Mark Braybrook. We're going to get the footy talk out of the way this week because it's going to be mostly rock and roll. We're sitting here at completely empty, I think that's fair to say, Brent Reed.
There's a few seagulls out there, Steve.
Amy Park, and with the first round of the finals completed and 18-8 here, Melbourne over Newcastle. Now, what did you think of the first weekend of the finals? Because some people were disappointed.
I thought some of the performances were outstanding. I thought the Tigers were great. I thought Brisbane was great. I thought Manly was really good in the second half. The one disappointment for me was Melbourne. I thought the game today was really flat. I thought Melbourne were disappointing. And I think they've got a bit of work to do.
It was the strangest sort of fluctuation in attendances ever, because we had two crowds of more than 40,000 and then two that were below 15, which is, probably shows just what a weird competition it is if you come from outside, you know, rugby league or outside Australia. You've got sort of suburbs playing against entire cities and you get weirdness like that, don't you?
Yeah, but one of the cities only got 14,000, which was Melbourne. There was 90,000 next door. That was another really disappointing thing about today, though, the crowd. I mean, only 14,000 here. The day they got the JJ Gilton Shield for minor premiers, they're the premiership favourites. You know, I would have thought they got more people here for that. Almost as many seagulls here as people, Steve.
Who impressed you most footy-wise?
Footy-wise, I actually watched the first two games. I thought Brisbane and West Tigers were outstanding, and I actually tweeted that I thought they'd play in the grand final, but Manly were really good in the second 40 minutes. If I had to pick a standout, I actually thought Brisbane were outstanding. I thought they were really good. They're young blokes. They've got Thaiday to come back, and probably the Tigers are close second.
Right, and another thing that happened here today, which is maybe of more interest in the football, was that David Gallop was presented. He presented the JJ Gilton Shield for the minor premiership, and also the club championship trophy, which I've never seen before. It's a weird little thing. He was loudly by people sitting in the very seats we're in now, well, perhaps not because this is a media box, but you know what I mean, you get the drift, loudly jeered, and it wasn't just boo, was it? It was kind of vociferous, like people standing up and flipping the bird and pointing at him. And what did you make of all that?
Well, you and I were down there, Steve, and we were only 5 metres from him, so and I could not hear a word he was saying. That's how loud it was. I know Ron Gorsey's actually apologised to him afterwards. I don't think he wanted that publicised, but it's out there that, you know, he's apologised to David Gallop over it. I mean, it's really disappointing, isn't it? That's a really good achievement that they've done, and I think it's been overshadowed by what's happened today. I mean, you know, they're obviously unhappy about what happened last year, but I mean, he's the NRL CEO and you've got to move on, but they need to move on from it.
Yeah, but I mean, I was thinking about this afterwards, strangely enough. It's not often I do that, but like, if you're an opposition player who's known as a really good player, and maybe you've been suspended a few times, for instance Paul Gallen in Brisbane, what David Gallop experienced is maybe what Paul Gallen experiences when he runs onto Suncorp Stadium. Like, we're asking the people who support the game to behave differently towards officials in public than players.
Yeah, but I think when they boo a player like that, they boo a Gallen, it's because he's a good player. They're not booing David Gallop because he's a good CEO. They're booing him because they hate him. I mean, you and I might think he's a good CEO, but they're not they think he's a bad CEO, and that's why they're booing him. You know, if it's a footballer like Gal or Darren Lockyer or someone like that, they might boo them because, okay, they've got a bad image, but they're good footballers. Lockyer hasn't got a bad image, but Gallen obviously gets booed.
But again, and I, like, obviously, I'm not defending them, but I'm saying I don't think there's any solution. I mean, he took two premierships. To them, he took two premierships. You can't convince these 13,000 people that, you know, the former administration took two premierships off. The former club administration took two premierships off the club. You'll never convince them that they believe the NRL did it, and they'll always believe that. So therefore, their reaction was entirely expected, if not something you can condone. Or what do you think?
Mind you, I think they hate everyone. I think if Brian Walsman had walked out there, he'd have been publicly stoned. So I think they just blame everyone.
You know, publicly stoned, as in, like, you know, smoking doobies, or you mean?
People would have thrown bits of Rick Stone at him, maybe. But it was, I just think they just blame everyone for it.
Yeah, but they
particularly, I mean, Brian Waldron doesn't show his face here as far as I know anymore, so they can't target him. David's the next best thing, and they give it to David. I mean, they've got the right to boo because they pay their money, and they pay their money to be members, but it's just that, for me, it's just a little bit disappointing.
Now, I do agree with you, but I just don't think there's any way to solve it. And, like, unfortunately, a lot of people who follow rugby league, that they are what's known in the internet as flamers. They just love to bag people and swear and be completely unreasonable and illogical. And you know, you get 14,000 of them together, what do you expect?
Yeah, it's going to get ugly, isn't it? Flamers, though. It sounds like a burger from Hungry Jack's or something.
Now, normally on this program you get to play a song, but unfortunately there's three songs that I definitely want to play this week because it's new Australian rock and I have to play it. It's like part of the sort of charter that I've drawn up that no one's seen. And so you can pick which one we play first. That's the closest you're going to get to requesting a song. So there's new Cold Chisel, new Angels and new Kings of the Sun. Which one do you want to hear?
I was hoping for a bit of Katy Perry. You've let me down. You better give me the new Cold Chisel.
Okay. We'll play the new Cold Chisel and after this we'll be back with Rusty from Electric Mary. Thanks, Brent. Brent Reed from the Australian. I didn't even introduce him properly.
Thank you very much, Steve.
I get home, clean up, put on my best shirt. Put on my good shoes. My arms are hard from what I do all day, and it's all for you, all for you. As I drive over by the steeple, by the hill, the night is new. The constellations are coming out again, and it's all for you, all for you. It's all for you. There are songs in the world.
White Line Fever.
That was All For You by Cole Chisel, and I'm now here with Rusty from Electric Mary, and thanks heaps for coming and joining us. And you watched a Storm game today. Now, we were just talking to Brent Reed before the song, and he thought it was disrespectful the way the crowd treated David Gallop when he came out to present the trophy. Can you give us an insight into how David's perceived here in Melbourne?
Well, David is not really well liked. It's the old Sydney-Melbourne rivalry thing, and I think the people down here believe that he... I think the people who love the Storm and love rugby league believe that they don't really want a side in Melbourne, which is kind of strange because, you know, it's a worldwide game and lots of people in Australia play it. Not so much down here, but, yeah, look, he's like a politician that no one likes down here, and he's never really going to be liked.
Yeah, it's like, what do you really expect? At least it means people care that they had two premierships stripped off them. I know Warren Ryan today on the ABC said for David today it was just like going to the dentist, but he had to go eventually. He had to come down here and do that eventually.
Look, he'd probably be used to it. People don't like Andrew Demetriou here either, so it doesn't matter. It's just the way it is. I actually sung the national anthem for the Storm.
I was going to ask you about your connections next.
Yeah, in... I don't know what year it was, but I have a feeling they won the premiership. What was the year they won their first premiership?
The one they got to keep, the only premiership they've still got, 1999.
Yeah, okay, it might have been 1999, yeah. They had... the guy who lost his leg was playing then. Yeah, what's his name? Nickow. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Because when I got in touch with you, it was more about the musical demographic of the program rather than the sporting demographic, and you not only follow the Storm, but you actually played at Dallas Johnson's wedding. How did that come about?
I think he just saw me playing somewhere. I was just doing a little acoustic thing in the corner somewhere, and that's kind of what he wanted for his wedding, but that's not what eventuated. We actually made a little band and we were noisy buggers, but it was a great... He's a fantastic guy. I actually... I've got a young son, and I took him down to the Storm training after his wedding, and he like really looked after my son. But it was also a great eye-opener for me because they were training with Carlton, because they were training at Prince of Park. They trained together. And they had a little... I don't know what you want to call it, touch footy, I guess, little game. So Billy Slater was on Chris Judd and stuff like that, and it was amazing to watch because, obviously, you know, Billy Slater is one of the greatest at his sport, and Chris Judd is one of the greatest at AFL, but I was amazed at the rugby league guys, how easily they got around AFL players. I guess because it's in the game where everyone's coming forward to them and they have to manoeuvre. They did it so easily, you know. It was fantastic. I love it. And then they had a goal-kicking competition at the end where the rugby league guys used AFL balls and the AFL ball guys used rugby balls, and the Storm smacked them, dude.
Did they?
They absolutely... maybe because the AFL ball's a bit heavier.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not when you put it down and you kick it like that. Yeah, but they smacked them, dude. They just kicked goal after goal. Those guys down there, I've seen them like out a little bit. They all get along. Elite sportsmen want to know what other elite sportsmen do. They don't... I'm sure some don't like each other's in the codes, but if you're an elite sportsman, you get along. And Billy Slade as well loved down here.
Now, we're going to talk about how you end up at every single major sporting event in the world, the luckiest man on earth, but we're going to go to a song now, and we're just talking before about Kings of the Sun, and everyone thought that they're now the rich and famous, the Hoad brothers, Jeff and Cliff, and we thought Kings of Sun were dead, but they've actually... there's a long lost unreleased album from 1997 called Daddy Was a Hobo Man. Did you know that this existed?
No, because we actually tried out their last guitarist for Electric Mary only about 3 months ago, and he never mentioned anything about that. He talked about the Hoad brothers, but he didn't mention anything about it. But I can imagine it'd be good. I'd love to. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, this song's about plastic surgery. It's called 27 Operations. So we'll have a listen to that and then we'll come back. Can you explain to us how you've gone to the Rugby Union World Cup, the Soccer World Cup? What else have you been to? We've got Formula One in the background. Have you been to one of them?
I have been to Formula One here in Melbourne, but no. I was just doing, same as Dallas Johnson, I was just doing a little show by myself on acoustic, and this guy came, Warren Livingston, and he said, hey, man, I really like what you do. Have you got a card? So I gave it to him. And he called me up about 3 months later. I did the Davis Cup for him. I did some songs. And then he got me to play at Leighton Hewitt's engagement. So from there, it just grew, and I went to I then went to the World Cup in, I've got to remember which years they come. I've done the World Cup in France of rugby union, Germany for football, South Africa for football, the World Cup of one day cricket in Barbados, which was an amazing gig. 10 days in the world's largest ship with sails. They lost my guitar. So for the first 4 days, I did nothing. I couldn't do anything. I had no luggage and no, yeah, no. I laid in the sun. And one of the most amazing things happened to me on that. It was Anzac Day. And Warren said to me, can you sing a song? And I'm like, wow, you know, I don't really feel comfortable singing a song on Anzac Day. I have no idea how these guys feel. You know, there was 400 on the boat, ship, whatever it is. But I remember reading in the paper that in Belgium, some Anzacs were found under a road back, you know, from World War II or something, and they were bringing their body, or their bones, whatever, their bodies home. And so I went and learnt, better be home soon, because it's the Australian-New Zealand connection. And I sung it. I don't know what ocean we're on, but we're in Barbados or that area. We're in the middle of the ocean. It was maybe 6 a.m. in the morning. There was probably 100 people. And it was the most frightening show or gig song I've ever done in my life. I thought Judas Priest was. But no. You know, and there was a few guys who had obviously been to Vietnam and stuff, and they were, you know, they were teary, but wow. What a show. That was a great time. And then since, obviously, we've been to the World Cup in South Africa, we went with Powderfinger. And
so where does your solo career fit in with Electric Mary now? Is Electric Mary 85% of your energies, or how does it work?
Well, Electric Mary's 100% of my energies right now. The only other solo show I do now involves me playing Electric Mary songs and my favourite kind of covers, like they would be Free or Foreign or something like that. I just do that once a week on a Friday at the ESPY, and it's a great gig. And I think I've been roped into doing some more of those types of shows when we go to Europe in a few weeks, because I got the email, said, look, can we do some acoustic shows? And I said yes, and I went to the band and they went, yeah, of course you can. Yeah, you just play those ones you play on Fridays. We don't have to be involved, man. Come on. I know what they're going to do. They're going to be out in Barcelona or Madrid or something with dad drinking and dancing, and I'll be in some little record,
paying for the hotel
in some record store in Spain where I don't know any of, you know, the language. And, yeah,
we're going to talk about Electric Mary shortly, and we probably haven't got time to go through the whole story. It's an interesting story, but we've got another song coming up now, which is I didn't even know this existed until a couple of days ago. It's a new Angels song, and it's technically Rick Brewster's Angels featuring David Gleason. So we'll play that because most people wouldn't have heard or even know it exists. And we'll come back and we'll talk about Electric Mary, and we'll play an Electric Mary song.
Hoping I won't fade away.
Eagles featuring Dave Gleeson. What do you think of it?
I love it, man. When it first came out, I can't remember when, I went straight on the old YouTube and had a bit of a look-see. Because I've always been a bit of a fan of Dave Gleeson. Of course, the Angels have amazing tunes. I wish they could get their own, you know, the original band back together. I was watching a documentary on them, and they just don't like each other. Well, they don't. They don't. It's like asking your first wife, can we get back together, and being separated for 15 years, you know?
So, I mean, as a musician, how do you look at that when the band is fragmented and they're all using the same name or a variation of the same name? Buzz Bistro put out a statement saying they can't call themselves the Angels featuring Dave Gleeson. They've got to call themselves Rick Brewster's Angels, maybe featuring Dave Gleeson. It's all, to a fan, it's a bit disheartening. I mean, it tends to turn some fans off completely. How do you view it?
Look, I always like to see the original if I can. Obviously, if people die, you can't. I think that's a very McDonald's American idealism to, you know, want to sue people now because they think they're going to lose something out of it. It's like, you know, I'd love to be a massive band, Electric Mary. I'd love it. But right now, for us, it's all about playing. That's all we want to do. We have the idealisms of when maybe we were 16. We just wanted to play music. It wasn't about how much merch we're going to sell tonight. Or, I mean, we need it now. We know that. It's part of business. But, you know, when we go on stage and before, those things just aren't in our mind. We just want to play music. We say, which Venom has asked me not to say anymore, but I always say it's rock and roll the way it used to taste. And, you know, that's what we do. It's fucking... Oops. It's loud. Oops, beep. It's loud. You know, we do drum solos if we feel like it. We do long guitar solos. We get the crowd to sing with us. You know,
people who have been to see the band and heard the band would be aware that Erwin Thomas was one of the principals, and he was better known as Jack Jones back in the 80s. Last time I saw you, which is a while ago, Nathan Cavalieri was playing. What's the current status? What's the lineup now?
Okay. Erwin has, after the Deep Purple tour, basically moved to New York, of which we were going to go to New York. We already went three times. He was born in New York, so that was the plan. But America kind of fell over for us, and Europe raised its hand. So we kind of went with Europe, and then Erwin was like, well, you know, I'm staying here and I'm going to do this, which is totally cool. We took Nathan Cavalieri to South Africa with us, which was amazing. He's a great guitarist too. I mean, because it's not easy to replace Erwin. He's a world-class guitarist. We have had another couple of people after Nathan because he's got his own band. Now we have Glenn Proudfoot, which was suggested to us by Erwin. He's a friend of Erwin's. He's been living in back and forth to the Czech Republic for the last 5 years.
Lucky him.
He's amazing, dude. He's amazing guitarist. He's already gone. He's on his way and back to the Czech Republic, and then he's going to meet us in a little place called Nantes in France, and we'll be ready to go. He's gold. He's a fantastic guy.
One day your support bands will be asked in interviews like that, you got any good stories about Electric Mary, but for now, if you got any good stories, because you've supported some amazing bands like Alice Cooper, you've mentioned Judas Priest, Whitesnake, David Coverdale, like, it's funny, he holds a mic so far from his mouth and his expression doesn't seem to change. Anyway, but might have him on the program one day. I'm not going to bag him. But you got any funny stories?
Look, there's two stories that are absolutely true, and I love them. Now, David Coverdale is my first hero. I loved him. I I called up the tour manager and I knew we were doing the show in Melbourne. We're only doing the one show. And I said, look, is there any chance that we can meet David? Because the drummer and myself are huge fans. He said, not a chance. He said, he comes to the gigs, he does his thing, and he goes home. But that was cool because we asked the question and we were told no. So we go to the gig, we do the sound check, and the tour manager says, look, when you finish your show, I'm going to need you to get out of the area and move all your stuff and, you know, kind of just get lost. So I was like, yep, cool. And that's totally fine. Look, we're the support band. We understand that. So we're singing away and I'm, you know, moving around. I look over to Pete to my left and I see David Coverdale there. And I'm like, oh, my God, he's, like, watching me. I was like a, I don't know, 15-year-old kid. So I turn back to go back and, like, not look at him, and the band is on the other side filming us. So immediately I went, okay, we're probably doing all right here. But in my mind also was the fact that we were told, make sure you get out of here when you're finished. So with the gigs finished, we go backstage. I'm taking my top off, getting ready to towel up. Coverdale walks in the band room, puts out his hand. Can I swear on this? It's only one word.
Any word you want.
Puts out his hand to me and he says, fucking great show, man. He walked out and I never saw him again. Now, we went to France and toured with him and he never spoke to us.
Wow.
Never spoke.
Freaky. Absolutely freaky.
Yeah.
Now, you get to introduce a song of your own. If there's a story behind it, you get to tell it. We're kind of running out of time a little bit. But
I don't want to talk.
No, I know you do. I know you do. So do I. But anyway, here we go. What do you want to play?
We'll play one from the new album. This one's called Lies. There's no real story to it. It's a kind of a fictional thing about, you know, a whole bunch of characters that I may have met in my little lifetime, you know, that hang around and do their thing. And this has, for me, one of the best guitar solos that have ever been on an Electric Mary record anywhere by Glenn Proudfoot played it. It was actually, I sent him the song, he was living in Darwin at the time, and I said, oh, in the middle bit, I'm going to sing something over it. And he said, all right, no problem, blah, 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 but because there was just an empty bit of thing. And he called me back and he said, oh, could I try a solo of that? And I go, oh, yeah, whatever you want, mate. And when we came down to Melbourne and rehearsed and he played the solo, I nearly fell over because I'd been working on this vocal that I was going to sing. And he goes, oh, sing us your vocal then. And I went, oh, no, it's fine, mate, it's fine. It was magnificent song. So this is Electric Mary and Lies.
Thanks for your time, Rusty. Thanks for coming and talking to us.
Beautiful, thank you.
captain and coach both said tonight you bring an X factor to the team. You don't know what that means.
X factor, is that singing or?
Nah, you can sing.